Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode. Hi, and welcome to Conscious Pathways, the podcast where we explore the intersection of education and social justice through transformative conversations in education. I am your host, Brittany, and as always, I am so happy that you are here joining me. As always, first things first, if you want early access to this podcast, if you want access to Ask an Expert, you can ask me questions directly that I can ask directly to my guests. You can join me on Patreon. I've linked that in the show notes below. For just $5 a month, you get access to all of that, a monthly newsletter, monthly live streams. It's a really great way to support the podcast. And so all of that support helps me in that goal of getting an editor and being able to elevate. I have big hopes and dreams of getting an editor for the podcast. So all of your support helps me in that dream and goal. This week, I am joined by Ben Arthur, a storyteller driven to help the masses maximize their potential. He's an NFL reporter for Fox Sports based in Nashville, Tennessee, and the host and founder of Pinnacle Code, a multi-platform show focused on empowering first and second generation Black Americans through conversations around identity and achievement. I was so excited to talk with Ben. I've been on Ben's podcast, so we did a little bit of a podcast swap, and so it was great to share my knowledge on his podcast, and it was really amazing to have him on with his background in media and journalism and storytelling. We talked a lot about the importance of media literacy in schools for students, how teachers can prioritize digital media literacy within schools. We also talked about how parents can also support their children at home with digital media. It's something that has grown exponentially over the last few years, and we talked a lot about that. We talked about how storytelling and media kind of work together. And it's just something that's been on my mind. I know it's been on a couple of my guests' minds. I know it's been on a lot of my listeners' minds as well, just concerns with digital media and how we are preparing students to engage in a world that is very media and very digital media heavy. So this is a really great conversation. So let's hop into it. Hi, and welcome to Conscious Pathways. Today I am joined by Ben Arthur. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Brittany.
Me too. I had the wonderful opportunity to be on Ben's podcast, Pinnacle Code, a couple of weeks ago. It was so great to speak to you then, and it's nice to connect with you again.
For sure, in different fields, but I think there's a lot of intersection in terms of what we're passionate about and what our missions are, our broader missions are. So really looking forward to this conversation.
Me too. I think that was a big thing that I wanted to shift a little bit with the podcast this year, was to look outside the classroom for people who have connections in education, who might but not be a classroom teacher, but might still interact with students or might still have an impact on how students perceive themselves or perceive the world. That's definitely a different direction, but I'm excited. And speaking about that different direction that we're going in, tell me a little bit about your experience in education.
My experience was really unique just because of the environment I was in terms of my schooling. So I'm Ghanaian American, first generation of my family to grow up in the U.S. And I think that brought kind of some nuances. And I think, honestly, I struggled with my identity a little bit just growing up. And not only because I was from like in a Black immigrant family, but I also grew up in an environment where it was predominantly white and Asian in the suburbs of Seattle. And honestly, I just felt like I grew up between cultures, like between the suburb environment I grew up in and then not fully relating to my parents' experience in Ghana, but then not fully relating to the typical Black American experience, and all that kind of maybe came together just in the way my schooling and how I was educated and just how I was looking at the information that I was taught, I think that all gave me a really unique perspective. And it's not something I complain about in any ways. I think it's given me my own unique power in a way and informed my perspective and has fueled what I do with my show, which maybe we'll get into later, but then also just how I look at the world and how I do my job and how I care for myself.
Yeah, we can get into it now because I know you just had a couple of weeks ago, you are shifting a little bit with your podcast, Pinnacle Code. And I think that really resonates with what you were just talking about, how growing up and being in between cultures and not really feeling like you fit into one specific area. And so how did that influence beginning Pinnacle Code and the shift that you're doing now?
Yeah, I think, well, firstly, with Pinnacle Code, the just so your listeners are aware, so the first idea or what I was doing for the first 6 months, really, it was focused on spotlighting high achievers in the Black community across diverse fields, focusing on folks outside of sports and entertainment, because that's like what we're fed in as society, the athletes, the entertainers, and the musicians. And in the environment I grew up in, I didn't really see that excellence in the Black community outside of those two realms. And so that was a big focus for me. But what I realized was that was just maybe a little bit too broad, and I wanted to niche down and really speak to a specific person. And what better person to speak to than the person you are or the person you once were or the experience you've had? And for me, again, being second generation Black American, product of Ghanaian immigrants, growing up in a environment where no one looked like me, where when I did interact with other Black Americans, like, I didn't really relate to them. When I would go back to Ghana with my family, I was too American for them. And then just in my environment in school, it was like, I'm Black. I was like one of the few Black kids growing up in most of the schools that I went to. So yeah, that was at the root of my shift to focusing on empowering first and second generation Black Americans through conversations around identity and achievement. That's where Pinnacle Code is at and where I hope to expand. And yeah, that's really shaped my life. And I think over time, I've learned to just appreciate that my authenticity is where my power is, right? I'm not like anyone else. Everyone has their unique gifts and strengths and weaknesses. You're your own person. You shouldn't be or try to be any other person, because your experiences, your context, and everything gives you your power. And so I think as I've gotten older, I think really honestly, Brittany, and it started really in college where I started to really embrace that more, when I got outside of the environment I grew up in and went to school, went away from home, went to a different state, and being just in a different environment, I think I really started to just discover that authenticity, because that's where I think your power comes from. So I think that's where I've tried to lean into as I've gotten older, now, what, 7, 8 years? And for me, yeah, that's shaped my life. It being more so just as the years gone on, as I've matured, created a life for myself, I think I've really learned to lean on that authenticity, really taking that focus into what I'm doing with Pinnacle Code now. It's the story of my life and really just putting it out there.
That is really beautiful, really taking that experience that you had and elevating that and looking at what would you have wanted to see, right, when you were growing up? What experiences did you want to see? That's something that that's coming to the forefront in education conversations. We talk about critical race theory. We talk about culturally affirming pedagogy, culturally affirming care. And that's really looking at the culture of the classroom and the culture of being present and who's being seen and who isn't being seen. So when you think back to your early educational experiences, did you feel like you saw yourself represented within the classroom? Did you feel like you saw yourself represented in the curriculum? And what was that experience like?
No, I didn't feel like I felt myself represented in the curriculum. That's the short answer. Like I said, grew up environment predominantly white and Asian, and so I didn't see, my peers didn't look like me, my teachers didn't look like me. From the time I was like 4 or 5 years old until I was 18, I don't think I had a single Black teacher. So I didn't see it represented in the folks who were educating me. Many of them were great people, right? But they could not really relate to my experience. And then in the curriculum, it was really just like Black History Month, right? It was the Martin Luther Kings and the Rosa Parks, and that was pretty much it, and like slavery. And it was just really February, right? Every calendar year is really just February. So there was no constant, it wasn't a part of the year-long curriculum by any means. Yeah. So yeah, I think there was always maybe a disconnect in that regard. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're in situations like mine, a lot of people can relate to me in that you just learn to assimilate. Like, it's just the environment you're in and you just try to fit in. That's why I say earlier how it was maybe harder for me to find my identity at first, because no one else was like you in my environment. So you just get in where you fit in and try not to be too much of a disruption and maybe not try to ask too many questions, which essentially isn't a great thing at all. But that's just thinking about where my mindset was when I was young, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. That's just where my mind was at.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the reality of so many students, right? We hear these stories often, and it's a testament to why we're advocating to have culturally responsive, sustaining, relevant pedagogy. Just looking at, again, our curriculum, whose voices are we hearing? Whose voices are we not hearing? Looking at the actual collective of our classroom. And when we talk about critical race theory, that's a big part of it, is just looking at the history that we're actually not saying, the history that we're not talking about. Because the only time I ever heard about Black people was when we talked about slavery or during Black History Month. That was pretty much the only time. And it was always the same thing every year. George Washington Carver and his peanuts, and Martin Luther King. I didn't learn about Malcolm X until I went to college. And I was like, wait a minute.
Same, Brittany. Same. I didn't learn about Malcolm X. I didn't learn about so many figures. I didn't learn about the Black Panthers. I didn't learn about systemic racism. Yeah. I didn't learn about Jim Crow. There are so many things that I didn't learn about. And I think as you get older, you realize, we're not really taught these things. And so I completely agree with you. I had the exact same experience.
Yeah, it's all through this very Western kind of lens, and it's all through this very kind of European-centric lens. I barely learned about Africa, barely learned about, you hear about, there's famine and there's poverty, and you hear all these different things, but it's also, but there's also really beautiful things that are happening in Africa too. And it's a collective of a lot of really beautiful countries, and why are we not hearing more about this? Why are we not hearing more about the people? And yes, the hardship, but also the beautiful things that are happening there as well. I just feel it was failed us in a lot of ways. And so when we're looking at education right now, we're looking at, okay, how can we change it so that it is actually telling the collective truths of our world and the collective truths of the people who are a part of this world? And so that's a lot of part of what we're advocating for in education. And kind of shifting gears a little bit and going to your background too in journalism, we talk about media literacy. What does that mean in schools? And do you think it should be prioritized in schools?
It should 100% be prioritized in schools. Media might be the most powerful force on earth when you think about, first of all, it's a part of our lives. Like, we wake up to our phones, we check social media, it's how we connect with loved ones. There's AI, the news sources out there. We're inundated with more information through various media sources than any other time in human history. And I don't think we always take the time to think about that, because it's just a part of our lives and who we are and how we interact and engage with the world. But I think sometimes we do need to step back and really look at it like that. And so I do think we need to prioritize media literacy in schools, because especially when you look at the proliferation of fake news and what's real and what's not, especially with the exponential growth of AI and deep fakes, it's become more important than it's ever been before in human history. And so really making sure that's just as much a part of the curriculum as learning about Native American history or the Revolutionary War or whatever, because it's how we engage with the world. It's how we perceive the world. I'm extremely passionate about that, and just being a journalist, and specifically in sports journalists covering the NFL, I see how people can get led down the falsehoods, the rumor mills, the speculation mm-hmm. that's not true because someone shares something and then another person shares something and it stems from a source that hasn't been verified. And then all of a sudden, it's like the truth with the truth. You can't even combat what's been spread so much because the truth has become engulfed by what the narrative has become. And so I think it's more important than ever that we put these guardrails or have media literacy as part of the curriculum from the time our youth, our little kids up through higher ed, just because kids are getting exposed to technology and the media at younger and younger ages. 3-year-olds messing around on tablets now. So I think it's more important than ever.
I couldn't agree more. I think the state of education and the state of just our society in general has shifted so much over the last 2 decades, 3 decades, right? And I remember when I didn't really start learning about media literacy until I went to college, just because when I was in high school, a lot of this stuff wasn't super prevalent. Like, we had social media, but it wasn't the primary space where people were getting their news, yeah. right? You were still getting your news from the newspaper or the news channel, you know? There might have been a couple of websites that you were getting news from, but you weren't getting your news from social media when I was in high school. It was like Facebook. And so that was just something that's exploded so much over this last couple of years, last couple of decades. And so now we see that there's young people who are, one, being exposed to social media at younger and younger rates, right? Whether that's a big social media platform or something like Roblox. Those are platforms where you're still interacting with people in a social way. It might be different, but you're still interacting in a very social way, and it becomes this kind of media-esque thing. And so if we're not really being mindful of what students and young children are interacting with, they're getting information out there. And so if we're not actually teaching media literacy at these younger ages, they're going to learn things and they're going to get stuck in their ways with these type of stuff. And exactly what you were mentioning before is that you might hear something on social media, but you might have heard that from a person rather than really verifying that source and seeing, is this an actual factual thing that happened? And especially, you know, you also mentioned we have deep fakes, we have AI. It's getting harder and harder to tell what's real and what's fake. Mm-hmm. And when we're looking at education, yeah, this definitely should be something that we're prioritizing. So talking about how students can understand things like race, gender, equity, power dynamics. How do you think the focus on media literacy, how do you think this kind of ties into these broader social justice issues?
I think a part of media literacy is making sure that you're getting your information from a variety of different sources, diverse mm-hmm. perspectives, because I think, and we see this especially in politics, if you're only consuming news from a particular kind of source, you're ignoring a completely different perspective, and you're getting so consumed in that world of that one side that you're into when you're constantly looking for confirmation bias, further prove to yourself that this perspective is correct. And that's how you see why we see a lack of people being able to come to the middle, right? Because mm-hmm. it's either the left or the right. Like, there isn't an ability largely for people to come back to the middle. And I think that goes just with media literacy more broadly. When you talk about issues of racism or equity or socioeconomic challenges, immigration, whatever, I think it's important that you're getting information from a variety of verified mm-hmm. sources. And I also think that's just how you grow as a person too, to expand your mind. It doesn't mean you have to agree with everything that you're consuming or engaging with, but I think it's really important for us to be able to expand our way, to expand our mind in that mm-hmm. way, to make sure we're getting different kinds of information. That's not just how you're the best informed citizen possible. It's not how you're just the most media literate person possible, but also I think how you can maximize your best self and mm-hmm. I think stay the most sane in a world where it feels like things are getting out of control. For me, just working in news, right? Making sure I'm consuming news from all sides, right? Like, I work at Fox Sports, and we obviously know the Fox brand, Fox News, maybe is slanted in a particular way, but okay, what are the news sources on the other side? What are they saying? What is their perspective on certain issues? And taking both of those in to come up with your own conclusion, like doing your own research. Don't just let one narrative just shape the entirety of how you view the world or your perspective on certain things. Make sure you're making a concerted effort, and I think that's the difficult part too. It's media is so powerful that it's unconscious in how we're getting, how we're being fed news, right? But I think there is a part of it where we need to be conscious and intentional with what we're engaging with and what we're interacting with. I think that'll go a long way. And then to the topic of media literacy too, I don't think this is just a responsibility of the educators and teachers in the classroom. I think at home, like just how we tell the sit-down conversation with our kids about morals or how to respect people or the sex ed conversation or whatever it is, I think making sure that media literacy and making sure that you're looking for verified sources of information, that you're taking in different perspectives, I think that should be a part of our regular routine as Americans and broadly citizens of the world. I think that's super important.
Yes, you bring up such a good point too, because we're definitely in this very uncharted territory when it comes to media as we know it today. It's very different than how we were consuming media several decades ago. And the way that we've mentioned social media has exploded and the way that we consume media. Before it was, you could consume media at these particular times of the day and these particular ways that you can consume media and news. And now you have the media news at your fingertips at any given moment, right? I remember a couple years ago, there was a time when I was consuming news pretty much from the time that I woke up to the time that I'm going to bed. It was just inundated with news everywhere. Yeah. You turn on the radio, there's news. I open my phone, there's the news. It's just nonstop access to news. And my mental health was abysmal because it was too much news. There was too much that was coming in at one point in time, but I was trying to get in so much information and trying to be aware. But it's such a good point, especially when we're talking about people, because it's the same situation for them. You know, you wake up first thing in the morning, you might open up TikTok, you might open up Instagram, and here's some news for you, right? Especially depending on who you're following and what content you're interacting with is going to really dictate how your feed is looking and what people are feeding to you and what you're consuming. So as people who are parenting children and teenagers, it is really important that you're engaging them in this dialogue because it's uncharted territory. We haven't seen media be this way in any part of our history. Yeah. And so having those conversations and being really open and honest about what media as a family we value, we want to be consuming, and being really mindful and critically thinking about the media that we're consuming. And like you said, not just consuming it from one specific source, because you're really only going to get a biased perception of that. Mm-hmm. Try to branch out and see other perspectives and try to hear what's going on in the general consensus, and then being able to form your understanding and your opinions on things, but only after you've done a little bit of background digging.
Exactly.
I feel like it annoys some of my friends. Most of my friends are used to me by now, but they'll ask me like, oh, how do you feel on this particular topic? And if I know about it, I'll respond to it. But if I don't know that much about it, I'm like, I honestly don't have enough information to really have a genuine thought on it right now. I need to do more research on it, because it's so important that we are aware of these things. And we're aware that, yeah, a lot of the media that we unfortunately consume today, it's very biased. And we have to do a lot of work on our end as the consumer to make sure that we're getting our media from reputable sources. I should have looked at the statistic before we got on, but there's an alarming statistic of how many people are getting their news from TikTok. TikTok is one of the biggest news platforms now, which is great in some ways because there are some really great creatives that are elevating stories that the bigger media platforms aren't covering or can't cover right now. There's a really brilliant young gentleman who delivers the news in Spanish. Fantastic, right? So there's some great opportunities to connect with creators who are doing kind of the social good.
Yeah.
But there's also creators who aren't doing that, who might be sharing information that's not credible, that's not well researched, that's not well backed. And when you have really young, impressionable minds seeing these kinds of things, it can be hard. We just talked about how overwhelming it is for parents to see how much media and where their media that their students are consuming. Even educators, it's hard for us to be really overwhelmed because we're seeing all this. What are we supposed to do? How do you think adults working with children can help guide them in discerning credible sources from the bias or the harmful ones?
Yeah, it's a phenomenal question, Brittany, and one I don't completely have an answer to, right? Because it's so fluid as our world continues to evolve. But I just go back to whatever it takes to maybe establish some guardrails. And I think this ties into what you were talking about with mental health, right? Just feeling inundated from the time you wake up. And if you have kids, whatever it takes to maybe establish guardrails or protections. Mm-hmm. And I know there are a lot of parents who have been lobbying just from a political standpoint, just trying to affect policy with particular age or just limiting the kind of information that's accessible to kids on all these different platforms and going to court about this. I think all those things need to continue. But doing your best to make sure we're establishing guardrails to protect mental health. Because I think that's where a lot of the issues can come from, right? The misinformation, all that stuff is a byproduct of the issues we've talked about. But the guardrails we need in place, I think the most important thing is for the sake of our kids' mental health, for the sake of our mental health. For me in my life, just working in the media, you can only imagine how many notifications I have. But for me, I don't look at my phone when I wake up. I don't look at my phone until after I've gotten ready, taken the dog out, in some cases worked out to really prime myself for the day. And then I try to only look at non-related social media scrolling. I try to limit it to only 30 minutes a day to the best I can. And so I know it's difficult to be really intentional about managing media usage and media consumption and media engagement. But for the sake of our mental health, for the sake of kids' mental health, for the sake of these parents trying to help these kids like with their mental health, I think we need to be as much as we can intentional with how much media we're consuming, when we're consuming media, and like how we're engaging with it. We have to adopt more of a conscious lens towards it, because unconsciously that's what the results we see in the world are now, like where it just seems out of control. So I think there needs to be, more discipline. We need to teach our kids more discipline when it comes to media. Because I think that ultimately is going to be what equips our kids coming up, that gives them the best chance to be successful. Because otherwise, and we see it, there are cases all over, and you've probably seen them too, Brittany, of just kids really struggling when they're away from their phone for too long, or the growth of the issues with anxiety and depression and not really having real human connections or as much as they used to in generations past. And so I do think there needs to be a massive focus on media discipline. I think that's where it stems from. And whatever way parents can do that with their unique situations with their kids is what I'd advocate for.
Yeah, no, that's such a beautiful point, because just talking about the guardrails, right? And it can feel like I'm being overbearing. And of course, kids have addiction to their phones. They have addiction to social media, right? They've just had it for so long. So it is going to be hard for them to break away from that. But it's so important, just the same as we put guidelines on alcohol and smoking, right? Because these things are detrimental to their health. They're developing and growing bodies. It's detrimental to them. So we've acknowledged that maybe we shouldn't just let them start binge drinking at 12 years old, right? Exactly. So we have laws that regulate that. Same thing that we should be doing with social media, right? It's not a very regulated type of thing. There isn't really a mandatory minimum or maximum that you can join it. Some platforms have put on age restrictions, so you can't join if you're under 13, I think. But that's usually just a little checkbox, so it's pretty easy to get around that. Yeah, I'm just like, totally, I'm over 13. There's really no way to check and verify that.
Yeah.
So there's definitely flaws to how it is right now, but we know that having access to this much media unregulated is actually detrimental to students. It's detrimental to their social emotional development. It's detrimental to their mental health. You know, I'm reading a book right now, The Anxious Generation, and it's really showing us the statistics of how in the last 10 years, students' mental health has been rapidly declining at alarming rates. They're having higher rates of anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation in these young people. And the thing that happened at the same time was this expansion in social media, this expansion in access to media that children have so easily right now. So we're seeing that it's having a actual physical, emotional, social detriment to these students' health, then yeah, we need to start putting guardrails on it. And we need to look at what age are we giving children phones? What age are we giving them access to iPads? And how much access do they have to the internet, right? They shouldn't just have free reign to the internet if they're like seven. There's a lot of things on the internet that should be regulated. And so when we're giving them smartphones at such a young age and it's not regulated, I know there's some apps and some kind of safety features on some phones that you can put on there, but really look at it, really make sure that the students or the young people that you're taking care of, what access do they have? What do they know about the media? What should they know about media? What questions should you be asking of them? There's a lot of dialogue that we can have with children outside of the classroom around this to make sure that we're helping them to navigate this new area and this new kind of era of life with media. But going a little bit more into, so you have this background in storytelling, and you've mentioned that storytelling is really important to how you show up in your work. How do you think storytelling in media can be a form of restorative justice?
Storytelling broadly, that's how things change. That's how policy changes. That's how our emotions are swayed. That's how empathy comes about, compassion. Yeah, storytelling is, I think, at the crux of that, and for getting people to understand like what the issues are. Like with issues like restorative justice, those kinds of issues and topics need to be packaged to the public in the right way to get massive change to happen, to get people on board with, okay, this is an issue that needs to be fixed. Everything is fueled by narratives, right? Some are more subtle than others, but it's very key. And I just look at, just in my particular case, covering sports, specifically covering the NFL, or I guess just pro sports in general. You look at what happened like during the George Floyd protest, the way NBA and NFL teams were galvanized, or the Black Lives Matter movement. These folks who have the biggest platforms in the country, and I think just with an issue like restorative justice, for instance, I think a lot of the issues involved in that involve Black and brown people, right? And there is no when you talk about the Black people specifically that are the most visible in the U.S., maybe in the Western world in general, it's Black athletes and Black entertainers. And so when those folks are feeling empowered or inspired, motivated by a particular mission, and we see them protest, not want to play in games or kneel during the anthem to protest police brutality during the Colin Kaepernick years in the NFL, and all the attention that galvanizes.
How could stories help communities to start healing and promote an understanding of diverse groups?
Of course. I think storytelling is very key to restorative justice, because that's where we see the power. Because when things aren't packaged correctly, things don't change. You look at some of the most powerful companies in the world. You look at Apple, you look at Nike, you look at Amazon, Oracle, BlackRock. All these companies, they have their narrative, that they've mastered the art of storytelling and how to get out a particular message, right? Because it's key to everything. But yeah, long story, that's a long way of answering your question, Brittany, but storytelling to me is, it's key to get anything to change. It's key to inspiring, to empowering, motivating change, or to motivating like us getting a certain spotlight on a particular issue.
Yes. And I love looking at how storytelling and social justice and civic movements throughout throughout the years, I love seeing how they've worked in tandem together. So during civil rights, their art form that they had to do storytelling was music, right? Mm-hmm. And so they got a lot of messaging out through the songs, through the hymns, and just that's how they communicated amongst each other, because obviously they were former slaves. They weren't taught to read. You look at the Chicano movement and how murals were a big way that they were storytelling, the way that they were telling their stories amongst each other. The feminist movement used poetry, and the Black Panther movement, they used drama. They would do performances on the streets to get people to hear their stories. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at how storytelling and how social movements and social justice have really worked hand in hand together, it's a phenomenal experience. And I think that during this age that we're in right now, we're seeing a lot of digital storytelling, lots of kind of visual storytelling. So in film, documentaries, short form, even our current, like right now, short form video has been a big, massive way of storytelling that people have been utilizing. And how do you see the future of storytelling evolving in this digital age that we are now?
Yeah, I think with storytelling, as you said, there's been a massive shift to digital, because that's the way of the world now. So there's been that shift. One way we've really seen it expand is with the creator economy and how many billions that is generating per year at this point, like the number of creators on YouTube and whatnot. And the people leveraging storytelling, getting a particular narrative out there to funnel people to their business to buy their products or to engage with their message. And so I think we're going to continue to see that grow and evolve, whether it be through AI, augmented reality. There are more media forms that we can't even really conceive of right now, I think, that are going to be present over the next few years only. But yeah, it's just where we're going. And to go back to your previous point about how, well, the Black Panther movement or the feminist movement, Chicano, all of that was storytelling. Right. It's just that maybe a lot of it was just through the written word or poetry. That's still media. That's still communication. That's still storytelling. It's just that now in today's age, all of that is translating to digital mediums, whether it's through social media or websites, blogs, AI. So I think we're only going to continue to see that evolve. And again, that really emphasizes the importance of knowing that everyone is going to be trying to control their narrative or funnel people with their narrative to a particular product or course or community, whatever, that it's important. I can't preach this enough for us to continue to keep our eyes open just in terms of getting our information from a variety of sources. Because otherwise, you can get so caught up in one particular world that you're closing off, like there are 100 doors, right? And you get so focused on one door, two doors, that there are 98 other doors that you're leaving unopened that could also shape how you engage with the world and in part fuel your personal growth and development. So I think that's so important. Yeah, it's going to continue to evolve, and it's going to evolve in ways that we can't even think of just in this particular conversation, because it's increasing at an exponential rate.
It really is. Every year there's just something new popping up, and is this going to stick? Is this going to become the new thing? Is this going to fade in the background really quickly? It's hard to know, but I think, as you said, it all really goes into this aspect of storytelling, and when we utilize media in this way to uplift those social justice voices, when we uplift voices that have been historically marginalized, who've been historically oppressed, systemically oppressed, when we start uplifting these voices through storytelling and through media and just visual storytelling and all these different aspects of it, we really can see the impact it can have on students and impact it can have on how people connect with each other and identity and all these really beautiful things that we've been talking about this whole conversation.
To that too, just with that growth, right? It's more important than ever before to make sure everyone has access to the tools we have, to my previous points. But as we talked about in the very beginning, Brittany, growing up in the American education system, it's very much a white, westernized view of the world. But just with the democratization of media tools available, storytelling tools available, to make sure everyone has access to tell their own story or their perception of stories. And just being second generation Black American with my family coming from Ghana in West Africa, and just knowing that in 2050, most of the world's population will be in Africa in the next 25, 30 years, and making sure the kids there, other diverse communities in the world, they have access to the same tools, because that's where I think the gap between the haves and the have-nots can get really crazy, right? If it's just the haves that have access to all the tools and the media and owning all the media, right? We need to make sure that everyone else has access to those same tools, so that just to maybe not only to level the playing field, but to make sure that the perspectives in the world are balanced and that one particular narrative doesn't dominate.
Yes, yes. Thank you for adding that in, because it's so powerful and it's so true. And we look at even social media, how it's conglomerated, right? And how there's one person who owns multiple different platforms that people are using. Exactly. And how that can also influence the narratives that can be told, right? Because you're going to see a different narrative on Twitter than you're going to see on TikTok, than you're going to see on Instagram, than you're going to see on Facebook, right? There's very completely different narratives, because every platform is going to have its own set of rules and guidelines and things that you're allowed to say and things that you're not allowed to say. Some platforms will let you say literally anything, and that platform that we all know what I'm talking about, but that platform has become a cesspool of hate, right? And if you go on the more extreme side, where on TikTok it is very censored, so there's a lot of things that you can't say and you can't talk about. And so it makes people have to do a little tiptoe dance around it in order to deliver news or media in that kind of way. There's pro and cons to both, but we're seeing the impact of what that looks like when you either just let people have free reign to say and do whatever they want, or you have a platform that's a little bit more restrictive. But you're right, not everyone has access to these same tools. And so that kind of creates this very peculiar digital divide that people have. And we saw that particularly in 2020, when everyone went digital. Everyone had to be digital because everyone was stuck inside. But there was this digital divide of people who didn't have access to certain things, didn't have access to internet, didn't have access to computers, might have only just had a smartphone. So it makes it really hard to do your homework when all you have is a smartphone. So things like that, it creates this very big divide and deepens these inequities that people have. Mm-hmm. Back when televisions became a big thing, they started giving free television stations to people because they realized this is how people are getting their news. This is how people are accessing this information. So we need to give people equitable, free access to the thing. When we realized that phones became an integral part of how people communicate and how people can gain access to things and information, you started getting the Obama phone, people giving out free phones, like just so that people have a way to have access to these important aspects, right? That is, and now we all get alerts on our phones when things happen. And there is that digital divide that's happening, and it does create really deep inequities for people who need access to really important forms of media. And on that note, tell me a little bit about how you reimagine the future of education. What does that look like to you?
Reimagining the future of education. I think as the world evolves, we need to focus more on personalized education, particularly in the American context, because that's what we can speak to. As we know, the traditional system isn't for everyone. Everyone learns different. Everyone has different strengths and weaknesses, what they respond to, what they don't respond to. And just because of their context at home or their culture, how everyone learns and engages with information is different. And so I think we need to, as we talk about reimagining education, I think we need to look to personalize it more so that everyone can be their most authentic self as they become educated and become adults in our society. Like, I think we have enough awareness now and enough tools now to where we need to start thinking about, okay, how can we start to adapt the education system for the modern world? Like, we don't have a system that adequately preps kids for what the world is becoming. We see degrees becoming more and more useless. We've seen the rise of higher education costs skyrocketing, just the workforce is changing as we know it, the jobs that are getting wiped out because of AI and adjacent technologies, and in turn, the jobs that are going to start to be created because of AI and adjacent technologies, we need to start thinking about that more. And I think that really starts with the individual and focusing on the individual, because everyone has their own strengths that they can add to culture, to society, and making sure that everyone has a chance to be their full authentic self, to become that person who can best help, is paramount. That's what we need to focus on when we think about reimagining education.
Thank you so much, Ben, for joining me, for sharing all of that great information. You dropped so many gems. So I want to appreciate you for taking the time to share that with me and my audience. Where can my audience find you?
Yeah, well, first of all, Brittany, thank you so much for having me. This was great. In terms of my NFL content, my journalism content, at Ben Y Arthur, BenYArthur. So Ben Arthur with a Y in between. That's for Instagram, X, Threads. And then for Pinnacle Code, my independent podcast, it's Pinnacle Code on YouTube, so at Pinnacle Code. And on Instagram, outside of Shorts, Instagram is where I'm most active posting clips for Pinnacle Code, and that's at Pinnacle_Code. So that's where people can tap in and engage with me.
Yes, absolutely. And I will link all of those down into the show notes. So if you want to connect with Ben in any of those platforms, you definitely can and absolutely should. Again, I want to thank you so much for joining me, for coming and talking about your educational experiences and digital media and media in general. I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
I hope you do too, Brittany. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning into Conscious Pathways. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to Conscious Pathways wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to leave a rating or review. It really does help the podcast to grow and find more listeners just like you. And until next time, don't forget to navigate your conscious journey with courage and kindness. And I'll see you there for more transformative conversations.